A leading thinker in regenerative agriculture is encouraging more farmers to get better at reading landscapes. New South Wales academic and farmer Charles Massey told a conference in Launceston this week, Mother Nature needs to be nurtured to create sustainable food systems. He says otherwise shocks like extreme weather events will continue to cause even more upheaval.
What looks like has happened now, in post the Second World War particularly, is this takeoff of damaging events, both in the environment but also with human population growth and the rise of GDP that's led to all these really damaging impacts on those Earth systems. And the evidence is mounting and generally increasingly accepted that it looks like Earth's begun to move out of that last 10 or 12,000 years, it's called the Holocene, that safe period, ideal temperatures, ideal climate, when agriculture evolved, which led to human civilization. We're now starting to destabilize those complex self-organizing systems. The carbon dioxide, we haven't seen anything like it in at least a million years. It's into dangerous levels, and then that means that the oceans are starting to acidify as they more carbon dioxide is absorbed. That could have a huge impact on not just life in the sea, but the regulation of oxygen. And now we're looking at devastating effects on climate because of what's happening up in the atmosphere and drying of waters and all that sort of stuff. So they're now saying that this new era we're moving into out of the Holocene is called the Anthropocene, human-caused new phase of Earth's history that's now going into a dangerous state. And the real worry is whether we trigger some runaway events that we can't stop.
Do you think it's also responsible for a large chunk of the world's health problems as well?
Look, when you look at the research now, and there's a hell of a lot of it, that shows how and why we moved post, say, the 1950s into this new dangerous stage. Dozens and dozens of indicators, both socially and environmentally, that show this exponential takeoff and damaging impacts, and human-caused, including the damaging nature to our foods and the chemicals that are getting into it. So as we go more and more down biologically dead soils in cropping and grazing and degradation, and we now know glyphosate's in the food system and having horrendous impacts on the gut, it looks like another exactly parallel exponential rise in the modern human health diseases, mental and physical, is intimately tied to the destabilisation we're causing, whether it's chemicals in the food, stripping the nutrients out of our food because the biology is dead in the soil, and that's what accesses all those nutrients and micronutrients. So the evidence is really starting to mount that the human health crisis and the global health crisis are strongly connected.
Do you think farmers can produce food in a sustainable way without using industrial chemicals?
Yes, the point I'd start by making is that the very best solutions to both the planetary crisis and to the health crisis resides in a healthier approach to biological agriculture, because the one influences the other. So we get our soils actively healthy and biologically diverse and alive. It's having a huge impact on human health issues. And it's one of the most exciting stories going around. We now know that regenerative agriculture can pull down more carbon dioxide by nearly 2.5 times better than any other method. And its impact on human health.
How so?
All the results show that once you get a biologically active soil and you protect it with cover and you stop carbon dioxide going up, that biological active soil is fixing longer-term carbon storage. There's no other way you can do it. I was in Gippsland the other day, and the first farmer in the world has just signed the first carbon credit under the Paris Agreement, and he's fixing just under 1% a year with some wonderfully integrated animal grazing over cropping, multi-species cover cropping. So we know we can do it, and it's being done now. And once you start getting biology back in the soil, protecting your soil with covers and protection, you get this transformational takeoff. I think you probably notice at a conference like this, there's an excitement and an exhilaration about getting into this, as opposed to some of the fighting of negativity, like I used to do when I was grappling with droughts and costs and all the rest of it. This is an exciting space because there's so many solutions involved.
On the Tasmanian Country Hour, you're listening to farmer and regenerative agriculture advocate Charles Massey. glyphosate, there's been a lot in the media about it, and particularly with the various legal cases that are happening in the US and now Australia as of this week. Is this an elephant in the room that you feel could come to the forefront of discussions in Australian farming in at least this year and in years to come?
I don't think there's any doubt. You've had one case in France, three big awards, penalty awards, even up to $2 billion. I know that's indicative at the moment, and these cases are on appeal, but there's four major cases. As you say, there's one pending now in Australia. There's something like 12,500 claimants lined up in the States. The evidence is there that it is a damaging chemical, glyphosate, to our environment.
Is this US evidence?
Yes, a lot of it's coming out of the human health area with people like Dr. Zach Bush, but others. Wonderful soil scientists like Don Huber and others have been talking about it for decades. But it's because it's a challenge to the powerful industrial establishment, it's been repressed and repressed. But it's mounting by the minute, as are some health concerns. And then a woman called Kerry Gillam wrote a book called Whitewash, which was 15 years of meticulous research where whistleblowers gave her documents to show that some of the big companies involved had covered up evidence of cancer, had captured the regulatory authorities and corrupted the process. So I think it will eventually be seen as a major risk. And, you know, with class actions and stuff, at the moment it's Monsanto that's got its neck on the line, Bayer Monsanto. But I know there's now Shire Councils and others starting to review policies around Australia, and at some stage they might start pointing the finger at those of us. Most of us have used it at some stage, and so
you as well.
Yeah, in the past I've had a couple of years of industrial cropping, and way back I've used it for spot spraying weeds. So most of us have done it, and but we have alternatives now. Yeah, and including in mass cropping, you know, you don't need this stuff. And through clever multi-species cover cropping and soil biological inputs, you can control weeds and do without it. So it's a big sleeping elephant, yes.
New South Wales farmer and regenerative agriculture advocate Charlie Massey speaking there to Larissa Smith at the Regenerative Agriculture Conference. Well, the regenerative agriculture movement is gaining traction worldwide. More farmers are sharing their stories of restoring their country back to a healthier state, including farmer Colin Size, who's an expert in cover cropping and recently spent some time in the US.
In relation to the cropping side of it, there's definitely a push or a trend happening in America, and it's mainly been driven by the concerns about declining soil and soil health. NRCS, their Soil Conservation Service, has driven a lot of that change in that they've been really proactive in promoting healthy soils, and that in turn has been driven by growing covers or cover crops ahead of their main cash crops. These cover crops now are being developed into quite diverse mix of species, you know, 10 or even up to 20 species in a mix, all planted together. What those plants do is they're basically biological primers. They're priming the soil biologically to complement the cash crop that's being grown after them. And it is working extremely well and starting to get a reduction in many things. Many of the American guys now are planting crops without pesticides, but also with great reductions in fertiliser as well.
Where did you go on this recent trip in the Australian summer?
Salina in Kansas, Burlington in Colorado mostly. I was keynote opening and closing speaker at the Colorado conference. A lot of enthusiasm there, there were 700 people at each of those conferences, and really a lot of enthusiasm, big push, just as there has been at this conference here. I mean, this has been, the people here have been very enthusiastic about looking for ways of changing. I think in Australia here, a lot of it's the very dry seasons we've had really for the last 10 years. That's driving it, but also many people that I talk to or come to me for help in this know that the industrial model that they've been using and is still recommended to them of agriculture is not working, it's failing. And they're needing to put more and more fertilisers, more and more pesticides on to even be able to survive on their properties.
Are American researchers being recognised for what they're doing in this space, or is there some pushback from agencies who feel that their way is the highway?
Definitely pushback from agencies. In the US, and their Department of Agriculture is really, and the best example of that is Dr. Jonathan Lundgren, who's an entomologist that had done some very good research work on genetically modified corn and genetically modified for insect attack, and found that that modified corn was then affecting many of the beneficial insects, including bees as well. And there was a big pushback with Jonathan, and to a point where he was forced to leave the Department of Agriculture, the American Department of Agriculture. He actually set up his own research farm and crowdfunded it, called Blue Dasher Farm, doing some wonderful work on that. So it's totally independent, so they can do real research. They're not influenced or in any way by multinational companies trying to sell something or convince them that their product's better than something else. Many of us now, well, we communicate a lot with each other. I communicate a lot with a lot of American farmers and a lot of American scientists now, and so we're sharing information all the time. So we can move this change quite quickly through sharing of information, and now internationally, which is really exciting stuff. Yeah, we learn from each other very quickly.
What's your advice to farmers who might be thinking about getting into these sorts of agricultural practices encompassing regenerative agriculture? How do you approach it from the get-go?
We need to be a bit careful about how we change. There's no doubt that we do need to change, as in we know that what we're doing is just not really working anymore, if it ever did. But also need to be aware that our farms, if we've used a lot of fertiliser and pesticides on them, we can't move it overnight, and we need to transition from where we are. In other words, wind back on our inputs over time and then gradually wean off them. If we do it instantly, straight away, we often run into some problems of either nutrient decline in our soils or insect attack or crop diseases. And it's because the farm ecosystem isn't functioning yet, and the soil ecosystem isn't in place and functioning either. So we need to let it transition and steer it in that direction, and then over time wean off those inputs. For example, I use 70% of the fertiliser that I used to use. Well, now I use virtually no herbicide at all. Haven't used insecticide or fungicide for 25 years. So we can certainly do it. And the reason it works and how it works is that Mother Nature's driving it for us. Mother Nature, like in natural systems, drive it. Natural systems do insect control fungal diseases. And it's because we have the predators in there managing the crop-damaging insects, for example, is how it works.
Farmer and cover cropping expert Colin Size talking to Larissa Smith at the Regenerative Agriculture Conference, which was held in Launceston this week.